you'll find a day. I'm walking on cloud nine today. I'm over that line today. Happiness is finally mine today. I guess I'm just a lucky guy.
Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. The holidays are a time to shine for home cooks. The key is preparation, and almost anyone can manage something. The magic occurs when someone pulls the meal together, from cranberry sauce to roast beast. New York Times food editor Sam Sifton has lots of ideas about how to make it work. He joins us for our annual holiday cooking show. Welcome back, Sam Sifton.
It's great to be with you.
Do you think holidays are a time to try new recipes?
Absolutely not. No, I do. I think that holidays are a great time to bring out new recipes, but I don't think that holidays are the day that you should introduce yourself to that recipe. I think that the next bunch of days in America should be devoted to trying out new recipes that, if they work and you like them, you can use on Thanksgiving Day. But the idea of, we have a great new recipe for a mushroom Wellington, essentially a beef Wellington made with mushrooms instead. And I think it'd be a great centerpiece for a vegetarian Thanksgiving. But the idea of doing that for the first time on Thanksgiving morning strikes me as insane.
Agreed. What if it's something like you're trying to do your grandma so-and-so's old favorite and doing it that way, where people more forgiving maybe?
Yeah, guaranteed failure. I mean, you know, everybody has the memory of grandma's whatever it is in mind, and you're just not going to get it the first time. You know, I often say that recipes are like sheet music, and you read them and you can imagine what the song is going to sound like. And indeed, you may have heard the song a million times. Mm-hmm. But when you actually set out to cook it, play it, it doesn't always work that first time. It takes a little while to find the internal rhythm or to find the correct pitch at which I'm going to torture this metaphor to death. it just takes you a little time. And I think, therefore, I think we should spend the next 10 days seeing if we can't come up, and particularly this coming weekend, seeing if we can't, if we have that desire to make something new, seeing if we can't make it at least once beforehand.
Right. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. It's our annual holiday cooking show today, and we are lucky to again have Sam Sifton, the food editor for the New York Times, with us. And if you have a question or comment, want to run something by Sam, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. A lot of it, you know, I'm already starting. I've made it several times now, but I still like to start working through my brain. I don't know if you do this, Sam. Like, say, my dressing, you know, what mm-hmm. I'm going to do. Don't forget, I got to get the turkey wings, you know, to put on top, blah, blah, blah. I just start thinking about it all the time.
Well, yeah. And that's one of the things that I love about the holiday. And I love people talking about the holiday because I learn new things every day. So, for instance, today I just learned that you put turkey wings on top of your dressing as it bakes in the oven. And I think that's so cool. What a great idea.
It's really worked out well because I also think the turkey cooks better, and as you have noted, duly noted many times, when it's unstuffed.
Yo, absolutely. Yeah, do not roast it. First of all, there's not enough dressing if it's inside the bird. Second of all, it slows down the whole process. It's too much. But a couple wings on top of the dressing mm-hmm. as it sits in the oven, and those wings give off fat and deliciousness into it. I'm doing that for the first time. I'm not even going to test that.
What I do is I poke a few holes in them and I render them a little bit before I do. I kind of get the juices flowing first.
Nice.
And then I put them on top. And, you know, and then you can also get some juices for gravy and things like that, too. But when I was growing up, my parents did stuff the turkey. Those were the days. But they also did it. We had a big family, so they also made a side dish of dressing, and it was always dry. And when I had to turn away from stuffing the turkey, I absolutely had to find a way to do it, and that's what I learned.
That's excellent.
Everybody, if you have a great idea for Sam Sifton, he listens. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. So I said, Sam, that I'm already thinking about things and writing them down, and we've divvied them up among the different people who are bringing things to the dinner. For first-time holiday hosts, what's your advice to them?
Plan. Mm-hmm. I think I wrote this in a newsletter the other day that the plan itself will probably go out the window, but the planning, the act of sitting down and writing stuff down, will help in the offing. Who's actually coming? Did you remember that your little brother has a new girlfriend? Is she coming? Is your college student coming home with lots of extra people? They're just get that down and then figure out what the menu is roughly going to be. You know, there's going to be a turkey. I hope there's going to be a turkey. Mm-hmm. But is there going to be a vegetarian main? What are the sides? Are you introducing any new things? Should we have oysters again this year? If so, who's getting – just getting a kind of plan set allows you to – abandon the plan when something goes sideways on Thursday. But if you don't think it through in the next few days, it'll make it all the more stressful when the day comes. And we want to avoid stress at all costs.
At all costs, exactly. And make a menu. Write it down.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And you can think about it. In the Church of Sifton, you got to have a turkey. So I know there's going to be a turkey there. But then you have the kind of white vegetable that could be mashed potatoes or cauliflower. You've got some green vegetables that could be broccoli or Brussels sprouts or leeks. You've got some orange, which could be butternut squash. It could be carrots, etc. And you begin to sketch it out, and you see that maybe there are some areas that you're not super familiar with or good with that you could farm out to a guest who's coming. I'm an okay baker, but I farm out all. I don't make a single pie at Thanksgiving. I farm that business out to my friends, but I know that I have to do that because I've written it down, and then I can call and ask, "Hey, will you bring an apple pie?"
Yeah, I'm a pie baker.
What is your go-to Thanksgiving pie?
My go-to, well, pumpkin from scratch. I think it does make a difference, and it's just fun.
Well, what? I'm cutting you off for a second. We got to interrogate that. When you say pumpkin from scratch, do you mean you are taking pumpkins and making pumpkin pie?
Yes.
Or you're making it with the canned pumpkin?
I roast the pumpkins.
Wow. You're like one in 300 million Americans who does this. That's so exciting because you are actually making a pumpkin pie. Did you know that canned pumpkin is mostly butternut squash?
Yes. I did know that. It makes it sweeter. But I have found that when I use those sweet little pie pumpkins, and I'm not an expert on pumpkins, that, you know, adding all the pumpkin spices makes the difference. And, you know, all that kind of stuff I added in, and it's just been outstanding. And I make my own crust, of course. But, yeah.
Ah, this is great. I think Thanksgiving at your house sounds sublime.
And here's another thing I do that's a little bit different is I make a walnut pie instead of pecan.
Whoa.
I like
Mind
pecan
blown.
Pie.
I love pecan pie. How is walnut
pie? It's not as cloyingly sweet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's now, just not as cloyingly sweet.
That's on the sweets, right? Not on the nut. Right?
But a walnut is less sweet than a pecan.
Interesting.
I think so.
Tell me more of your Thanksgiving. It sounds like a delight. How many people will you have?
This year we're having 12, but I'm not making the turkey. And we're apparently our friend's son works at Whole Foods, and he's bringing the turkey duck turducken. Yeah.
So now, turducken is a fascinating thing. That's a turkey with a duck in it. And then a chicken inside the duck.
Yeah.
All entirely boneless. That is a stuffed number.
Yeah.
They can be really quite delicious.
I've never had one. So I'm trying to stay open-minded.
I think you're going
to
enjoy it.
It's not my problem. I mean, they're cooking it and bringing it. So that's something I've kind of let go over the years for one reason or another so I can focus on the pies and some side dishes and that kind of a thing. And I'm good with that.
That's great. But we're facing down 30, so it's going to be a war zone.
I've had bigger groups, 12. This is very manageable. I can almost fit them all the way around the table without putting a card table at the end. So, you know, we're doing pretty good. I like everyone to sit around the table.
Absolutely. So, yeah. No kids' tables.
Let me ask you this. In the absence of stuffing a turkey, what do you put in the cavity?
Oh, that's a great question. I have gone in my pursuit of Thanksgiving excellence, I have traveled far and wide, and I have gone everywhere from nothing, because I really like if you aggressively season the inside with salt and pepper, I like the way it can kind of tighten up on the inside and mm-hmm. you're kind of roasting from both directions. And my belief is that it kind of seals in the juices of the breasts and thighs all the more, to putting some aromatics in there, a half an onion, a half an orange, a half a lemon. I have a recipe on nytcooking.com for a mojo turkey, a kind of Cuban-inflected turkey recipe that I picked up in South Florida, that's where there's lime and orange in the cavity. But not a lot. You want some air circulating around in there. So as not to slow the cooking process.
Any herbs, rosemary?
Sure. I like a mixture of, check this out, butter, soy, and rosemary. And so kind of and I'll add an allium to that. So so a half an onion, mm-hmm. A couple sprigs of the rosemary, a pat or two of butter, and then a good glug of soy in there. And boy, that's a fragrant and delicious combination.
Do you think celery makes any difference?
I am bringing a new recipe to the table. I've made it a bunch of times, so I know it's going to be a success. And what it does is it takes celery and puts it at the very center of a dish, not as a supporting element as we use it so often in dressings, but as an actual thing. So this is a recipe by the writer Toni Tipton Martin. It's in her great, invaluable new cookbook, Jubilee. And it's for braised celery. And ooh, you braise it in turkey fat, maybe the fat you get off of your wings before you put them onto your dressing. And it cooks down and concentrates. And oh my goodness, all of a sudden you see, wow. Yeah, celery's real. That's a legitimate vegetable, has a real taste, can hold its own on the plate. It's not just something to be eaten raw with chicken wings. It's fantastic.
You know, it was always a staple on our Thanksgiving table. We would have, but it would be with cream cheese in it, you know, and that was one of you know.
Yeah, raw with cream cheese in it, maybe some raisins.
And yeah. And whoever got to that, you know, the ants on a log thing or something like that.
Yeah, that's a super upsetting thing.
I know, I agree. Let me ask you this. One thing I learned from reading one of your recent articles is you're not a salad man on Thanksgiving, and neither am I, a green salad.
Yeah. I'm just going to state this
point?
Definitively. Yes. There is no place on the Thanksgiving table for salad. We eat salad all the time. We're a nation of salad eaters. This is the Thanksgiving. You have so many vegetables to choose from. You need not make all of those vegetables out of, in a sauce of cream or butter. There can be brightness. There can be acidity. There can be all sorts of really delicious stuff going on with the vegetables that accompany that are at the center of the meal. So why do we need another plate and a salad? What are you doing? Like, let's have our Thanksgiving meal and then we'll go for a walk.
Exactly. I like your spirit, Sam Sifton. That's Sam Sifton. He's food editor for the New York Times. We're talking about, it's our annual holiday cooking show today. And joining us when we return, Rich Terapak Sr., WSU food critic and blogger. And you can check out all the things our bloggers do at All Sides Weekend Chefs in the City at WOSU.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
do you turn what you love into a career? On Season 2 of the Rivet podcast from WOSU, hear firsthand from students translating their interests into jobs without college. Listen to This American Graduate Project as we highlight the next generation of workers in the state's top industries of agriculture, insurance, and healthcare. Support for the Rivet podcast series comes from COSI. Subscribe now at WOSU.org/Rivet, on the WOSU mobile app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Beans and cornbread. Beans and cornbread. Beans and cornbread. Beans and cornbread had a fight. Beans knocked cornbread out of sight.
Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Here's the questions. Orange zest and the cranberry sauce. To brine or not to brine? Pumpkin or pecan? In my world, it's both, except I switched the pecans out with the walnuts. It's our annual holiday cooking show. Still with us is New York Times food editor Sam Sifton. Joining us, All Sides Weekend Chefs in the City co-host, WOSU blogger and cooking teacher Rich Terabak.
Good morning, Ann. Good to be here.
Thank you,
Sam, for coming back to Central Ohio. You've enhanced Thanksgiving for us for years.
Yeah. Well, I love being there.
Yes. It's great to have Sam Sifton with us. If you have a question or comment, give us a call. What do you do? What matters to you when it comes to the holiday meal? 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Okay, so Rich Terabak, I'll throw it to you first. To brine or not to brine?
Well, we've brined for years. You can buy a kosher turkey and it's already brined. The dry brine is the one I'm after right now. I think it really does the job. You got to remember to rinse a little bit of the salt off before you put it in the oven. But putting it in a big garbage bag with a solution of water and a bunch of herbs, it never really quite did it for me. But the dry stuff does. Sam, do you do a dry?
Yeah, we all brined for years, it seems, just like we all, I guess, used to wear wide ties or skinny ties or short skirts or long skirts. It's just a sort of fashion that comes in and out. But the reality is the taste test proves that if you brine, I'm talking about the traditional brine, the wet brine, it too often for me leads to a kind of slack, soggy meat it's fake juicy, it's not actual juicy. Mm-hmm. But I think you're absolutely correct that rubbing the exterior of the bird with salt so that the skin kind of puckers up and gets tight, it allows the bird, when it goes into a hot oven, to seize up almost immediately. You're not evaporating any liquid on the exterior of the skin. You're just almost immediately beginning to melt fat, as it were, and create a kind of a blister around the bird that keeps the moistness in the meat where it belongs.
Right. The important thing is to remember to do that about 24 hours in advance in the refrigerator.
After it's thawed,
and after you've dried it,
yes,
thoroughly, and then you can't just put it on and hope for the best and stick it in the oven.
What's the deal with drying off the poultry, whether it's chicken or I hear that all the time. I do it.
Yeah,
I follow the rules, but why that?
Well, as I mentioned before, you think about what happens if you put a wet bird of any provenance into a hot oven. The heat first has to evaporate the water that's on the bird, and creating the steam. And it's a super ineffective way of cooking the meat. Imagine taking a pan and putting a little water on the bottom of it and then trying to sear a steak. You'd have the same problem. The heat would need to boil off the liquid ahead of time. So really drying the bird helps enormously in getting a good crisp skin, which is what many of us want out of Thanksgiving.
Sure.
Let's see. Tyler in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Tyler.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was just calling to see if you or your guest had ever tried cooking your stuffing or your dressing inside of a pumpkin, which I have heard about and tried and find that it You know, it serves the purpose of keeping things moist. It adds flavor. It's like cooking it in a turkey, but you're not ruining your turkey. Mm-hmm. And you may, in fact, be able to put those wings on top, like Ann talked about.
Have you heard of that, Sam?
I sure have. And indeed, I've used a version of that as a vegetarian main dish, as it were, for those who don't or choose not to eat the turkey itself. Mm-hmm. So I'll take delicata squash, smaller squash, and kind of hollow them out and fill them with a kind of nut-based or nut-enhanced dressing with some dried fruits in there and roast that off. And everything just gets – it's really good, actually.
Sounds great.
Someone,
great.
Yeah. And that recipe is available to you on nytcooking.com.
By the way, the NYT Cooking website, I mean, the whole thing, it's unbelievable, Sam.
Unbelievable.
Thank you.
It is a treasure trove.
It's the first thing I read when it comes out.
It's fantastic.
Get the briefing, just go right to the
There's a million. I just printed off, like, just the table of contents for the Thanksgiving section. It's phenomenal.
Yeah.
Thanksgiving has really expanded for the Times over the past number of years. We're now up to, I think we basically cover it for about 5 weeks now straight. It's a real run-up. It's our Olympics. It's our national election. It's a big thing.
Tyler, thanks a lot for that call. You know what? That reminds me, you're former national editor for the New York Times, and I wonder how much you bring that national perspective, do you think, to being food editor?
Oh, I hope I bring it a lot. I mean, one of the reasons why I knew that returning to the food desk to start NYT Cooking would work is because I had spent the previous 5 years kind of traipsing around the nation following our great correspondents in their 13 news bureaus around the United States and spending a fair amount of time with them as they reported and as I did reporting on my own. And naturally, because I'm kind of food obsessed, I would end up in a lot of kitchens talking with people in their kitchens, and I would see over and over again tattered old copies of the New York Times cookbook, mm-hmm. which was this Craig Claiborne collection that was put together in the 1970s at a time when the Times was not a national newspaper. You couldn't get the New York Times in Akron then, but you could go to the bookstore and get the New York Times cookbook. So I had a pretty good idea going in that we might be able to be successful because there was some, I guess the business guys call it brand recognition for the Times. But above and beyond that, I knew from my travels and my work as national editor, I knew how rich a food culture this country has and how exciting it could be to plummet and to share the flavors of the nation with the nation. And it's kind of working out.
Yeah, it kind of is.
Yeah, real well.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. It's our annual holiday cooking show. We always do this before Thanksgiving, but a lot of this stuff applies to any of the holidays upcoming over the next month or so. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Rich Terpak.
Sam, there was a recipe that I don't think we have to rehearse a lot that you had recently. I think it was Allison Roman, the fancy canned cranberries.
That's right.
I'm so glad you brought this up. I think this is going to be the breakout hit of Thanksgiving 2019.
Yeah.
It's so interesting. So she takes canned cranberries and slices them in coins and then kind of alternates those coins with citrus, with orange slices and some red onion, hits it with a lot of citrus juice and some flaky salt and calls that a day. And it's beautiful. It's kind of radical chic.
Exactly.
I don't know. I've railed against canned cranberry sauce for years, although I secretly kind of love it. But the note, and I've said, if you ever do use canned cranberry sauce, to absolutely mush it up, otherwise it looks a little odd. But Allison has somehow broken the code and created this fancy canned cranberry situation that I think could be really good.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to definitely give it a shot.
I'm going to give it a shot, too.
That reminds me of the time my grandparents were over. My grandma was a super gourmet, I mean phenomenal, phenomenal cook. And we had Thanksgiving dinner, and she started complimenting my mom, her daughter, who never did anything right in the kitchen, on her cranberry sauce. And I gently got up, walked into the kitchen, and tossed the can in the garbage.
That's good pass protection. You're a good daughter. You're a good daughter.
Let's see. Susan in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Susan.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Susan, I'm going to ask you to turn off your radio, and then we'll get right back to you, okay? Okay, Susan, have you turned off your radio?
Yes, I did.
Okay. Welcome.
Well, thank you. Good morning. I think it's still morning.
Yeah.
So I have a weird but good cranberry sauce salad. My mom always called it a salad. So this is from the 60s. She got a can of cranberry sauce, just the plain old cranberry sauce, which mm-hmm. I know is gross, but she put it in a blender and added lemon juice to taste. Like, I don't know. She never measured anything, and I don't either. Maybe a quarter of a cup, mm-hmm. maybe. That may be too much. Anyway, so she pureed that, got out muffin tins and, you know, put the liners in them, poured, divided that amongst the tins or the, you know, the cupcake holders. Mm-hmm. Anyway, and then she mixed Cool Whip with mayonnaise to taste.
Whoa.
And
whoa, 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 whoa.
Not Miracle Whip?
I take it back. It was Miracle Whip.
Oh, no.
It sure was. I don't use Miracle Whip. But I still use Cool Whip, which I know is gross, too. But so anyway, you mix that all up and put, you know, just put the dollops of the whipped cream mixture on top of the cranberries and freeze it.
Okay.
Everybody I've served this to who likes cranberries loves it.
Yeah.
It's just enough different. And it's almost kind of desserty, too.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I'll say there's a lot of sugar in there.
Yeah. Wow.
So that's kind of fascinating. So, yeah, so you're cutting the sugar, or you're not removing it. You're just cutting the taste of it with the lemon juice and the cranberries. And then you're doing a sort of similar number on the Cool Whip with the salad dressing product, since, of course, Miracle Whip isn't a mayonnaise but a dressing. Wow, horrifying and probably wonderful.
Susan, thanks for sticking your neck out on that one. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You know the thing about the cranberry sauce? It's sort of the first thing I make. You know, I make mm-hmm. it a few days ahead.
Yeah,
and it just
kind of
kicks. But it's such a festive thing to put the cranberries in and pour the sugar and make it all wonderful.
I agree.
It's a kickoff thing.
And I do exactly the same thing. I you know, at the times I'm working all the way up until Wednesday night, and I get home, and literally the first thing I do is make the cranberry sauce on Wednesday night, and just there we go. And it's so simple that it makes me wonder why everybody's buying it in cans. Like, it's not like, you know what I mean? Like, it's not like it's super complex. It's not a demi-glace. It's like, you just do it. I don't know. It's a conundrum. But that's the beauty of Thanksgiving. Everything's a mystery. People do things for reasons that have to do with their family traditions, with something that happened after freshman year in college when you went to some other place for Thanksgiving for the first time. All of these things become knit into your own traditions, and they're all equally valid. I make no judgments, even when I shudder.
Exactly. Rich Terapak, is there a must-have on your Thanksgiving table?
A must-have?
Besides the turkey or whatever your main dish is.
Wow. I think we're going to abandon it But my sister loves to make the green bean casserole.
Oh, the old with the
old
mushroom soup.
It's not a must have for me, but yeah. It's a.
We must have green beans on the table, but yeah. We don't do the casserole.
Right, some nice hard couvert from Trader Joe's are just fine.
You have a homemade green bean casserole on the website, Sam Sifton.
Oh, sure we do. Yeah, it's not a part of my tradition, mm-hmm. right? We have to have Brussels sprouts as our green, our green bean casserole kind of tries to upgrade some of those components away from packaged goods. Not that we have judgments about packaged goods. It's just we're a kind of from scratch outfit.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
That's kind of what you do. I'm going to take a quick call here from Dixie in Pataskala. You're on the air. Hi, Dixie.
Hi there. I always make sweet potato pecan pie, and that way it doesn't matter whether you like pumpkin or whether you like pecan. You got both.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. How do you do that?
Yeah.
I mean, is what's on top? What's on the bottom? Oh.
Or is it all mixed?
Oh, the sweet potato, mashed sweet potatoes on the bottom, stirred up with some cream and stuff, and the pecan on the top. Okay. It is the best pie I've ever seen anybody just go crazy for. It is never enough to go around.
Wow.
Wow. I want to investigate.
Yeah.
That sounds terrific. Thanks for sharing that idea.
Thanks, you, Dixie. That does sound really good. Another thing that I wanted to talk about was the vegan, vegetarian piece of all of this. Is there an etiquette, Sam Sifton? Do you feel obligated? But it's still only about 5% of the country is vegetarian.
I've got two daughters
surprisingly,
in law that are vegans.
But depending on your demographic, right?
Yeah. Right, right. It's 5% of the population, but it's like 75% of the kids who come home from college
right.
for their first Thanksgiving. So it's kind of tough. Look, here's the scoop. I don't want to be lectured. That's it.
Yeah.
I'm happy. I'm going to ask everybody who comes, do you have a dietary restriction?
Mm-hmm, right.
Great. And I will accommodate, but I don't need to be told. I'm not making judgments. Don't judge my turkey. Mm-hmm. Don't, we'll make this all work. No one's going to change anyone else's mind about anything during the Thanksgiving holiday. We're just trying to enjoy our time together. And I'm of the mind that there are some really, really, really delicious things to eat that don't contain animal proteins. And so I'm going to offer those as well. And we're going to try to have a good time.
Sam, you had a recipe. I was recently the Portobello Wellington. And the only non-vegan was the butter and the crust. What could we substitute, if anything, for that? Because I do have to.
So first of all, this mushroom Wellington is bananas good.
It looked great. It
looks good.
And I recommended in a newsletter that with leftovers, you can kind of put a slice of this stuff into a sandwich with a little mayonnaise and some cranberry sauce on top. And I could introduce that to a sandwich chain and make a gajillion dollars. It's pretty easy to make it vegan because there are vegan puff pastries. There are quite a few of them, actually. They're not super hard to find. And then you can kind of use one of the nut butters or butter substitutes to caramelize the onions. You might not get quite as glisteny an exterior painting it with egg as we do. Mm-hmm. But I still think it would work really well as a vegan dish with those substitutions made.
Yeah, great. Well, that's one I'll do in advance. Yep.
We will be right back with New York Times food editor Sam Sifton and also WSU food critic Rich Terapak Sr. Questions or comments, 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Over the river and through the woods to grandmother's house we go. The horse knows a way to carry the sleigh through white and drifted snow, over the river and through the woods. Oh, how the wind does blow. It stings the toes and bites the noses over the ground we go.
Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. It's our annual holiday cooking show. Still with us, All Sides Weekend Chefs in the City co-host, WSU blogger and cooking teacher Rich Terapak Sr., and New York Times food editor Sam Sifton. Questions or comments? What do you want to talk about when it comes to that holiday food? Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And Rich Terapak, you wanted to talk about cheater stock.
Yeah, there's a, I think it may have been a Roman recipe as well.
Allison Roman, yeah.
Yeah, look it up. The cheater's turkey stock.
Yep.
Browning the neck and gizzards, I guess. It sounded like it was stovetop.
Yep. The one question I have here is like, what is it, really cheaters? It's like,
yeah.
You know, like.
It sounds like work to me.
Well, yeah, I've made a stock like this for a long time as a kind of like additive to the meal.
Right.
You mentioned dry dressing before. I always have stock bubbling all day.
Yeah.
A similar one to Allison's. I don't always use the liver. But I think it's a great addition for getting a little, fortitude in mm-hmm. into the stock. But having stock on your stovetop as you cook Thanksgiving, as opposed to making stock afterward and using it for soups and gumbos and the like, is absolutely a way to ensure success on the day.
Yeah.
Not just because it allows you to revitalize dry dressings, but also, here's my tip of the day.
Okay.
When you slice the turkey, which of course you should do in the privacy of the kitchen and not at the table, like some it's not a show.
Yeah.
You put that turkey onto a warm platter, and then I always the last thing I do before sending it out to the dining room is to take a ladle full of that hot stock and just run it over the breast meat and thigh meat, not the skin, the meat itself,
right.
which
mm-hmm.
gives it a last blast of heat and moisture before it goes out to the table.
Good right. tip.
Yeah.
Real good
one.
Tip. Yeah.
Let's see. Kenny in Mount Perry, you're on the air. Hi, Kenny.
Hey, good morning, guys. So not to digress too much, but with the dry, when you're doing your dry salting,
mm-hmm.
I like to inject the turkey first with Cajun or garlic or whatever you want to inject with, then do your dry salt and get it really good and dry, and then you go straight into the deep fryer.
Okay.
Oh, nice.
Okay, yeah, yeah. Wow. That took a turn. No, I'm a big proponent of deep frying turkeys. I spoke before about the blister effect.
Yeah.
And there's no better blister effect than lowering the turkey into that hot bubbling peanut oil. It's just great. I've had mixed results with injection for a couple of reasons. One, like I think if you spend a lot of time around needles or with needles or using needles, you may be better at this than I am. But I found that sometimes they leave these sort of boluses of the brining marinade in the meat. So there's like a pocket where there's a lot of juiciness and it's hard to kind of get it to go all the way through the breast meat or the thigh meat. But there are operators who certainly can pull it off, and I'm all for it. The one thing that I always caution with injecting liquids into birds that will be deep fried is to just make sure you're not going overboard. I've been in a situation where I literally exploded the breasts off of a bird in a deep fryer. It was like a turkey bomb. It really was one of those things you see on YouTube.
Dramatic, kind of hold, but not appetizing.
Hold my beer situation.
Well, Kenny sounds like he knows what he's doing, so happy Thanksgiving to Kenny. Let's see. Eric has a question about turkey, too. Hi, Eric.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Thanks, Ann.
You bet.
I'm a big fan of yours, and this is an awesome show. I had a question Every year I use cheesecloth inside the oven until about the last hour, and it's a recipe that I got from Martha Stewart probably like 10 years ago. I think I've been doing the same thing, but I tweak it each year, and I wondered what the panel thinks about cheesecloth, because I always get such an amazing brown, crusty skin.
It kind of saves it till the end, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, it just keeps it moist in the oven, and then I take it off at the last hour and just let it
brown.
Yeah, it's a strong move. I think that I'm shocked to I can't believe I'm saying this, but I think that recipe is even older than 10 years. I think that's like a 15. I think she did that a long time ago. And I've had the results of it, and it's just awesome. For whatever reason, it hasn't become part of my, you know, standing repertoire, but I'm all for people doing it. And I had someone wrote in a couple years ago to tell me that he didn't have cheesecloth. I thought this was so WASPy and Martha Stewart-y at once. he didn't have cheesecloth, but he had an old dress shirt. And he took this old Brooks Brothers dress shirt
Pima cotton.
Used that. Yeah.
And he frayed at the cuffs and everything.
Exactly.
Yeah,
right. It's no good for wearing to the bank any longer, but it sure works great on the turkey.
Oh my gosh.
That's funny.
That is good. Eric, thanks a lot for that call. We still have a few minutes left. If anybody else wants to give us a call, 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Here's a recipe from Kim Severson on the New York Times food website. Roasted potatoes with figs and thyme. And I do a shout out to Kim Severson. I went to college with her.
Great.
Yeah. So roasted potatoes with figs and thyme, though. Anything with a fig in it,
Yeah. You're
kind of getting me. What do you make of that, Sam Sifton?
I'm with you. I think, the fig, I always thought the fig's closest friend was bacon, but now it turns out it dances very well with these roast potatoes. And that's a recipe, I think, that Kim scored from Daniel Hum, the chef and now sole owner of 11 Madison Park in New York. It's the fig, when it roasts, right, it adds a little umami. Yeah. I mean, we think of umami as a sort of soy thing. Mm-hmm. Mushrooms have it as well.
Uh-huh.
But there's a certain concentrated flavor to it that releases in the oven. And the fragrance of the thyme on top. Oh, man. Now I want to make that.
Yeah. Well, it's your website. We're just enjoying it.
Yeah. Tell me about the Sweeney potatoes.
Yeah.
Those sounded great.
Oh, my goodness. So the Sweeney potatoes, this is from a couple years ago when I was looking all around the country for, like, you know, dishes that represented who a particular family was or where they came from. And the Sweeney potatoes from a family called the Sweeneys out on the West Coast in Alameda, California. They've made this version of what used to be called company potatoes. Your grandparents may have heard of this. And there were lots of canned soups in those things, mm-hmm. and they made them with frozen hash browns. This is all from scratch. Potatoes from scratch, but there's also cream cheese in there. There's butter, there's sour cream, there's milk,
yeah.
there's cheddar. Like, it is unbelievably rich. And dense and light at once.
Wow.
And I've made the Sweeney potatoes now for a couple of Thanksgivings running. And I think the proper serving size is one tablespoon.
One tablespoon.
But it's Thanksgiving, so go crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe you can have two and then go lie down on the couch for a while.
Those sound delicious, right. Yeah.
Gloria in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Gloria.
Hi. Great. I always look forward to this show every year and all year long.
Us
really.
Too.
I have a question about some tips on cooking a bone-in turkey breast.
Okay.
And do you have any ideas of, you know, keeping it moist and so forth?
Sam Sifton.
Well, I think a roast turkey breast is just the turkey without the bottom half, as it were. So I think it follows. You're going to follow the same kind of principles that you would with a whole bird, but there's less fat there because you're losing the fat of the mm-hmm. thigh, so it's going to be more prone to drying out. So the most important factor, I think, is the temperature of the meat. Inside the middle of the breast. Like, this is one of those instances, as with a standing rib roast, where in the investment in an instant read digital oven safe thermometer is paramount, right? Because you can get perfectly crisp exterior skin and the thing is dry as a bone because mm-hmm. you've cooked it to 175 degrees without really realizing it. Mm. So if you have that, if you're marking that temperature as it ticks up, and you pull it at 160 so that it can rest for a little bit and the temperature will continue to rise, taking you to 165, which is what the Department of Agriculture wants us to take it to, although, you know, I serve it plenty at 162. knock on wood.
We don't invite any Aggies to the
Yeah. So, the government wants us to be safe.
Yeah.
The key there is temperature. My big tip is invest in that thermometer, and you won't dry out the breast.
What's the deal with what side you start the turkey on, breast or back?
This is more of that crazy talk folk wisdom, right? Like, start it upside down and do it this way.
And then you
got to
turn it over, which is not easy. Yeah.
It's not easy to turn over. Okay, you're a 25-pound turkey, and you're like, now you got to give it a somersault. It's like you're taking... It's not the size of a baby. It's the size of a toddler. It's like it's sort of hard to do. So guess what? I don't do it.
Okay.
I'm going to do it. It's breast up from the beginning. Yeah. I think a really good thing to have is a rack.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I like having the bird off the bottom of
Absolutely.
The pan.
Yeah.
And I think I get plenty of there's plenty of heat going around it, and it works out pretty well. The real advice I have to give is it's not that complicated. We don't need, you know, witch's brews to mm-hmm. make it work better. There was a great moment when I talked to someone who had a great family recipe for a particular way of making a particular cut of beef. And this is what makes it great. And eventually he went to his grandmother and asked why she did this radical thing. And she said, because my pan wasn't big enough and I had to cut that part off. So like we choose to believe that flipping the thing around three times makes it taste better than not doing anything at all. But I'm telling you, just you don't need to do anything at all. Just
anything I can do to reduce the stress, because that is a stressful moment. I don't do, as I mentioned earlier, I don't do the turkey anymore, but I will again someday, I'm sure. And that has been stressful for me to do it. I've got the big poker things that you can flip. It doesn't matter. It's still hard.
No.
Awkward.
Yeah. It's super hard. The only important thing is that you cook it to the right temperature and you don't burn the skin.
Right.
Like, just those are the two axes that you need to keep track of. All the rest is falderall.
If it looks like the skin is getting too dark, what can you do to hold that off? I know I put, you know, tin foil or a guard around my crust with my pies. What can you do with a turkey?
Tin foil. Just give it the old tin foil hat and let it spout some conspiracy theories. And the tin foil hat is your friend.
that's terrific. And it's not dark enough. It gets to temperature.
Yeah.
Betty Rossbottom, one of our local chefs now living in Dartmouth or in Hanover, New Hampshire, used to do a mixture of soy and molasses and essentially paint the turkey toward the end of the cooking, and it makes it look great. You know, it's sort of a varnish, but
Earlier in the show, I mentioned that butter soy combination, and if you add a little mirin in there, a little brown sugar, something with a little sweet, there's you can encourage that caramelization on the crust of the, on the skin of the bird, Which looks great and actually tastes pretty good, too.
Yeah.
I don't do this, but as far as the brine goes, some people put brown sugar in their brine. Can that achieve sort of the same end?
Well, no, because
you're going to wipe it off.
I absolutely wouldn't do it in a dry brine because you're not going to get absorption of the sugar through the skin.
Okay.
Yeah.
In the way that you will with the salt. And if you leave it on there, it's just going to caramelize and burn. Yuck.
Sam Sifton, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it.
It's always a pleasure to be virtually in Ohio. Thank you.
Sam Sifton, he's the food editor for the New York Times and joins us to talk cooking. Thank you to Sam Sifton and also Rich Terapak Sr., WOSU food critic, cooking teacher and blogger for WOSU.org/chefs in the city, right?
Yep, right. Happy
thanks
Thanksgiving.
For joining us. Happy Thanksgiving. Happy holidays. Thanks to everybody for your great calls, and thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.